Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Banduho. On today's episode, I am joined by BA's own Matt Eddy, and we are talking about phenoms who have gone through the farm, through the big leagues, are done, and are up for baseball's ultimate honor. We're taking a look at next year's, or I guess this coming year's Hall of Fame ballot, specifically the first time on the ballot guys. So today, Matt's a big New York guy, big fan of the Hall of Fame. I love, frankly, arguing about the Hall of Fame, being just kind of a general complainer about the Hall of Fame. So we kind of look at the candidacies of the first-time guys. We're talking, you know, Adrian Beltre, my favorite player growing up, Joe Mauer, one of Matt's favorite New York Mets, David Wright, Chase Utley, a lot of other first-time guys on this ballot who we touch on. We talk a little Jose Bautista, a little Colon, little Phil Hughes for all you Yankees folks out there. And then at the end, we kind of talk about some of the holdovers, what we think about the Hall in general, you know, what we think the threshold of a reliever getting into the Hall might be. But just generally a fun episode. Matt and I have kind of circled the wagons on talking about the Hall of Fame for a while, so I was really glad that he could join me on the show. Episodes of Phenom on the Farm drop every other Tuesday. If you enjoy this one, subscribe or get your podcast. Go check out past interviews, typically talking to former players, but we've had, you know, like Matt, we've had a couple people from BA, the main site on. Next week or next episode, we are having our first broadcaster on, minor league broadcaster. Very, very excited about that. So, and if you haven't yet, leave a 5-star rating interview on Apple Podcast. Also, make sure to subscribe to BaseballAmerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. Wrapping up the minor league season, you know, just did a big refresh of the top 100. A lot of great stuff there. It is always a good time to be subscribed to Baseball America. And with that, let's talk to Matt Eddy. Let's talk about the Hall of Fame. All right, joining in for today's episode of From Phenom to the Farm, he's here to talk about a lot of phenoms. It is BA's own Matt Eddy. Matt, thank you so much for joining the show.
Hi, Kyle. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here. I've been really looking forward to this. We're here to talk about the Hall of Fame, one of my favorite topics. Before we do, I guess kind of let's do some promotion. What's going on at BA? What can people expect over the next month or so? And what do you have cooking up in the next issue?
Yeah, we are deep into the summer prospect season, you know, that professional and amateur side. So we're doing our final in-season update to the organization top 30s. We're on the amateur side, we're pulling together the top Cape Cod League prospects, Team USA, summer showcase, all that fun stuff with an eye toward the 2024 draft. And it's also best tool season. We're getting those lists together for the major and minor leagues.
Well, some of the guys that we are going to talk about today featured heavily on those lists as they come into. So let's jump right in. We're going to talk about the Hall of Fame. You know, we just had the recent induction ceremony, recent inductions. But before we get into today's ballot and who we're going to be discussing, what is your relationship to the Hall of Fame? You're a native New Yorker, so you have actually been to Cooperstown many a time. And just your thoughts on the Hall of Fame and the, you know, what it holds for baseball fans.
Yeah. Cooperstown is a magical place. I'm sure that's the cliche, but it's probably the thing I miss most about moving from New York State down here to North Carolina is the proximity to Cooperstown. You know, I grew up maybe 45-minute drive from there. So I've been there, I don't know, a dozen times, lucky enough to go see two inductions, 15 and 16. So that was the second. That was like the Pedro Martinez, Randy Johnson, Mike Piazza, Ken Griffey, and others induction classes. So
those are two bangers.
All the fantastic players we grew up watching. Yes. So that was a lot of fun. So the Hall of Fame and the process in the apparatus around it has always really, I've always been drawn to it. I love it.
So with that, your thoughts on the process, we obviously now have the new, I can't remember the committee that elected Fred McGriff. We have that new kind of more recent players committee. We've had the Veterans Committee, and then obviously the Baseball Writers of America getting their 10 votes, which I think we wanted to caveat that you are a member of the BBWA, but will not be voting for a while.
Yeah, as of this year, I am. So, yeah, it'll be 10 years down the road before I cast a ballot.
So you've got to start thinking about those classes, what those classes could look like.
I was just thinking, it's like the players who retire in 2027, I believe, will be like eligible for the first time when I have a vote.
That's exciting, because you can kind of project who that might be. But with, you know, as someone, I think we all do, every year we look at the ballot and we say who our 10 would be. Your philosophy on voting, because there are writers who sometimes will not vote for anyone. There are guys, you know, writers who will not use all 10, will only vote for a few. Have you been traditionally, like if you were voting on this year's ballot, would you use all 10, or would you traditionally use all 10?
No, I would probably average around 5 to 6, just off the top of my head. I've never actually had to do one, so I don't know precisely what I would do, but my estimate would be about 5.
Okay. And what to you qualifies a Hall of Famer? Is there a way to put it into words? Because now it's interesting with WAR and with Jaws, we have kind of a statistical threshold that most of these guys fall under. But is there a way to quantify that and not just such a single stat? Like, are there a few things that you think, when you think Hall of Famer, this is what I need from that player to get this vote?
Yeah, in general, I adhere to the Bill James standards that he laid out in the Whatever Happened to the Hall of Fame, that book, which I like revisit every 5 to 10 years. I love that book. The main criteria for me is, was he the best player in his league at his position, you know, for an extended period of time? Like, did he define that position in the major leagues or in one of the major leagues? And another one of, I think he calls this the Keltner test. Was the player good enough that he could continue to play regularly after passing his prime? I know you love that one, but these two.
Yeah, that one's where I take a small bit of issue with. Because that, I think that's the first one I wholesale agree. The second one, I think there are players who have been benefited. Health is a skill. Health is valuable for players. And I, you know, there are guys who bolstered those Hall of Fame resumes and were able to get over the hump because they were able to stay healthy into their 30s. I always come back to Craig Biggio as a guy like that, who I know he had some elite seasons. I think he had 2 7 WAR seasons, but because he was able to play so long, was able to tack off that 3,000 hit, was able to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, which he, you know, probably not.
Well, he wasn't first ballot. Sorry to butt in. He was second or third. Yeah.
Yeah. He gets in and then, you know, but was able to tack, you know, have those late seasons to increase that WAR total, increase that hit total. So I go back and forth because I would have loved for if Johan Santana had gotten in the Hall, I still would love to see that. The fact that he fell off after one ballot to me feels just criminal, because he won 2 Cy Youngs. He should have won a third. If we had today's voting standards, he has 3 Cy Youngs. There's not a pitcher with 3 Cy Youngs who isn't in the Hall of Fame. But he was cooked at 30, in his early 30s. He was done.
No, that is a good point you raise about Santana, how his career would be viewed entirely differently if he'd won, what is it, 05? But Bartolo Colon won that one. Is that the one?
Yeah, who was on this year's ballot.
And would that be 3 in a row for Santana? Three sides.
Three in a row. Best left-handed pitcher in baseball. Because really, when he came on, was when Randy Johnson started to tail off a little bit.
Right.
That's when he went to, I think, the Yankees and then the Giants to finish it all out. But yeah, that was 05. Cologne went 21-8 with a 3.4 ERA. and a 3.75 FIP and won the Cy Young.
And no, so I do like that point you raised about Santana. On the flip side, I would say that some short career players, Sandy Koufax, Kirby Puckett, two prominent examples, if they're strongly associated with a championship team, they do tend to get the benefit of the doubt. So by the writers, which is obviously the tougher group to please is the writers. So
That's what kills Santana. I think when Felix Hernandez comes up, I think that'll be a big point of discussion. It's pretty similar, elite for a stretch, cooked around 30, no playoff success. But let's dive into these first timers. We can talk about them from the BA angle as prospects and who they were. Do you want to start? Are there any notables that you want to start with who will just absolutely not get Hall of Fame consideration, or do you want to start at the top?
I think we should start at the top. Please the fans.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you want to, let's start with the obvious. I would say there's one slam dunk absolutely getting in on this next ballot in Adrian Beltre.
I thought you were going to say Cologne.
of course. I mean, he's kind of a content Hall of Famer for everything he gave to us. But Beltre, obviously, there's no argument against it. And he was hyped from the get-go. He was BA's number three prospect in 1998, got up at 19. When you think of Adrian Beltre, because to me, he's got a really interesting career. He had that, he had the contract year explosion in LA. He gets the big deal in Seattle, and in Seattle, he's good, not great. And then it's really, he's one where it wasn't just that he was able to hang on past what are traditionally his prime years. It's that he was able to turn a lot of those non-traditional prime years into some of the most productive years of his career.
I know. In fact, you probably associate him strongest with the Rangers because those teams did the best postseason-wise, and he was a key part of that and where he finished his career. But I think his best single season probably was that Dodgers year, second in MVP voting. Probably the highest four. I don't have that right off the top here, but yeah, I think when you view, like, he's the perfect marriage of peak and career value because he checks all the boxes, offensively and defensively at a position that historically has not been heavily represented in Cooperstown. So I think I agree with you that he's an easy first ballot selection.
Yeah. He didn't get to Texas until he was 32. After turning 30, he turned in a 7.8 WAR season, a 5.6 WAR, 7.2, 6.2, 6.7. He turned in a 6.7 WAR season at 37. he's got benchmarks you need. He got the 3,000 hit. He was an elite defender. There's not really a whole lot of, much else to say about him. He is an example of a top prospect who was able to get through some rougher younger years that we see. You were actually tweeting about Bobby Witt Jr. earlier, is someone in kind of a similar place who is up really early, earliest struggles, still extremely, extremely young.
Yeah. Yeah. It is hard to fully grasp that he had already batted, more than 800 times before turning 21, which in the major leagues.
After missing a minor league season too. If we're talking about Witt.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was talking about Beltre there. But
That's insane.
Okay.
If Beltre's in, I mean, I don't think there's any. He'll definitely get in. There are two others on the... I'll kind of leave it to you. How many of the first-timers do you think eventually get in?
Eventually get in. That's a good way to put it. Because Beltre is in. Let's see. I think ultimately, do you want me to spoil it and just pick the names?
Yeah.
Okay. Ultimately, I see Chase Utley and Joe Mauer getting in as well.
I see that
as well. From this first-time group. And I believe those are the only ones I would say that for this group.
Yeah. So let's talk those two, and then let's talk some of the other first timers. Particularly, you're what Joe Mauer is to me. I think David Wright is to you. And then going in this class. So Mauer obviously goes 1-1 in 0-1, goes 1-1 over Mark Pryor. So not actually the top prospect in his draft, but was BA's number one prospect in back-to-back seasons. Delivered on that, won an MVP, won multiple batting titles as a catcher, where I always, and it, you know, health knocked him down. Once the move to first base happened, I think he only had one season over three WAR. Where I come back to this with Joe Mauer, because I would like to see him be a first ballot Hall of Famer. It would just obviously mean a lot. He was the last player that I was able to look up to from an age perspective. Now, most everyone playing is my contemporary or younger. But with Mauer, and I would like your take on this, I'm like, if he is not a Hall of Fame catcher, then what is a Hall of Fame catcher? And if that's the case, why not? Why wouldn't he be a first ballot?
As to the first question, yes, I believe he was the standard bearer at the position in the American League. No question. I think in the National League, he went up against Yadier Molina and Buster Posey at the various points of their careers. I think all three are Hall of Famers.
I would agree.
Kind of defined the position for the first 20 years of the 21st century. So, and you know, and Mauer's peak value is incredible because he did things that literally no catcher has ever done. And that's easy to overlook now because we remember the late career Mauer, like 7 years or so, first baseman. But at his peak, I don't know, like three batting titles, correct? An MVP, like things that are the batting titles have never been done. The MVP is rarely done by a catcher, especially today. They don't seem to rack up the plate appearance totals. So, yeah, I completely agree on the first point. And as to the second, I don't know. I think as people reflect more on the decision, they will see the light that he was a Hall of Fame talent.
I hope so. And I've told you this, but I am more big Hall guy. I look upon NBA All-Star or NBA Hall of Fame weekend with envy. Now, the NBA Hall of Fame is actually the Basketball Hall of Fame. So it incorporates international stuff and like Yao Ming got in and things like that. But I always see that weekend is this big celebration of these stars that people got to watch growing up. And there's never a single, you know, just a David Ortiz going in or something like that. Baseball keeps it a little tighter. I would like to see more, for me, bigger Hall of Fame classes celebrating guys, especially the guys who had the shorter peaks, which, you know, I think we'll get into with David Wright, the guys where health did not pan out, but were still able to put up elite status in some form or another. With Baseball Hall of Fame, I think the conversation absolutely should be the stat sheet, what they did on the field, like 98% of it. I do think there is just some merit that Joe Mauer was able to be on the cover of MLB The Show and have Head and Shoulders commercials as a guy playing for the Minnesota Twins. I think that's a big deal. I think him being able to, because no one on the Twins this might just be me as scorned Twins fan. No one on the Twins was famous ever. Kirby Puckett was very famous. Kirby Puckett was like on talk shows. Mm-hmm. But between Kirby Puckett and Joe Mauer getting on the cover of MLB The Show, it was a dark hole. That's not where you went to be a famous player. And Mauer was able to transcend that. And I think in some form or fashion, that stuff is... I don't know if it should be relevant, but I think it's interesting. I think it's part of the conversation with David Wright too, because David Wright was a standard bearer for baseball, the Captain America, the World Baseball Classic stuff. And like World Baseball Classic is interesting. Like, would you factor international competition at all into someone's case, especially someone on the fringe?
I've never thought about that specifically. I would definitely give a heavyweight to postseason. I never actually thought of like preseason WBC, but that's interesting. But I do agree with your point that he did kind of encapsulate the face of baseball at his peak. I think he was, you know, about 75% of the way toward a Scott Rolen career. Mm-hmm. Like I think he's it's about 75% the size of Scott Rolen, and he has ahead about 75% the career. No, but David Wright was phenomenal. He's somewhat forgotten how great he was. Mm-hmm. I think he made 7 or 8 All-Star teams, mm-hmm. like in his first 8 seasons. It's ridiculous. He was regarded as the best third baseman in the league when he played. But spinal stenosis, a chronic back injury that really severely limited him late in his career. He also took a nasty beaning from Matt Cain in 2010, mm-hmm. which took him a long time to recover from. Yeah. So it was, you know, Maurer had the concussion, Wright had the beaning, and later the back injury really derailed what, in my opinion, was going to be a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah. So that's where we get to. So Wright, through his age 31 season, had accumulated a majority of the WAR that he would end up with in his career. Like he was like over 48 WAR through his age 31 season. He was playing well, still playing at a mm-hmm. high level. With guys like that, like with Wright, how much more do you, because it took Rolen a while to get in, and Rolen had a very long career. If he had mm-hmm. gotten, so 7 All-Star games, 2 Gold Gloves, 2 Silver Sluggers, if he mixed in, is there anything he could have done in that time? Like if he had mixed in an MVP, or if the Mets had won a World Series and he's World Series MVP, is there anything that can get a position player in at 31?
Yeah, I think those are the things. I believe he narrowly lost the 07. Was he third in balloting that year? He would have been first on my ballot. I believe it was
07. He was fourth.
Yeah. And he is, depending on how you look at it, unfortunately associated with some Mets teams that did very poorly.
Yeah.
The 06 team lost to the 83 win Cardinals, probably the worst World Series champion ever. And then the 07 and 08 teams died in September.
Yes. If he could have, was it, what Mets team lost to the Royals in the World Series? Was that 2015 or 2016?
15.
So he, that's when he only played 38 games in 2015. The 28 games, he had an OPS plus of 126 in those 38 games. If he could have stayed healthy for that and been a big presence for that, the entirety of that team, it's just interesting. So I'm in the position where I would love to reward someone with, like, David Wright's really fringe. But I just feel it's good for baseball to celebrate guys like that for a weekend. But it's one where it's going to be tough.
You know, I would say that the Hall of Fame electorate now is as good as it's ever been. You know, the 10-year rule, where writers have to have covered the game within the past 10 years is a great qualifying standard. Mm-hmm. And, they're averaging 2.5 electees per year for the past decade, which is about right. Cause if you look at, you don't want, Cooperstown needs 1 or 2 electees per year. And we've steadily been seeing that, which is great. It's mm-hmm. great for Cooperstown. It's great for the Hall. I think more than 3 is probably too many for an induction weekend. But I think we're really in a sweet spot right now for Hall of Fame inductions.
Mm-hmm. Well, then let's talk about the third guy who probably gets in. Chase Utley is the most interesting case of these to me. What do you think of when you think of Chase Utley? I mean, now I just think of asses in the jackpot. Like that's I think what everyone should now associate with Chase Utley is Terry Collins's blow up.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
The 08-09 pennant winners, the slide in the 2015 postseason.
Yep.
And pretty good longevity. He played until he was 39 at a position not known for longevity. Mm-hmm. Those would be the three things.
Yeah. BA's number 81 prospect in 2003. So of these guys we've talked about, even David Wright, the most unlikely Hall of Famer. You don't rank a guy 81st if you think like he's got the Hall of Fame ceiling. And typically when a guy comes up as a second baseman, you're not you're not thinking Hall of who, you know, just maybe him and Robinson Cano minus some stuff with Robinson Cano would be your two Hall of Fame second basemen of the past 20 years.
Yeah, hit those two, Pedroia, Altuve. That's the field, I think.
Pedroia, I was actually thinking about him the other day. That's another one where longevity, I mean, when he was done, he was done. Mm-hmm. But when he was good, he was real, real good.
Mm-hmm.
And the best at his spot.
So with Utley, as a prospect, I don't know that the Phillies knew what to do with him, because I know they experimented at third base with him. I think he spent like two or maybe three seasons in AAA. So I don't think even the Phillies were convinced they had a future impact regular, let alone a Hall of Famer. And that 2000 draft is generally regarded as one of the worst ever, especially in the first round. Mm-hmm. And yet Utley, taking, I don't know, 20th or whatever he was, has a case. Adrian Gonzalez taken first as a fringe case, but
also
two impact
this,
players.
Yeah, also in this class. Like, yeah, I think Utley gets in, because again, if Utley doesn't get in, I think it's a similar question to Maurer. Like, if he's not in, what is a Hall of Fame second baseman now?
Exactly. Yep.
So I like that. So some of the fringe guys, I mean, Matt Holliday, I would think he's now, you would say, the least likely Holiday to get into the Hall of Fame. If you were just picking, odds, would you pick Jackson or would you pick Matt? Or the younger brother is a top prospect too, is he not?
I like the way you framed that. I think I would still probably pick Matt just because we don't know yet about the other two, but that is funny.
Yeah, Matt Holiday is just, you think of him as the professional hitter. Best player on a World Series team with that Rockies team, brought the Rockies of all teams to the World Series. Matt Holliday is one where I don't want to say the fame, but just the steady presence is probably a little more adds a little more to his case than the exact numbers. I think career wise, I don't really think he's there anywhere, but just a really good player.
No, I agree. And I think he's one of the, like, for what WAR has given other players, it was taken away from Matt Holliday because he was a poor defensive player.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to impact his jaws standing quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. His jaws standing is 39.4 is what he finished with. A WAR over a 7-year peak, just 34.3. Only finished with 316 career home runs, did have a career OPS plus of 132. Adrian Gonzalez, basically right behind him in jaws. Interesting for him, I mean, he was like you said, in a bad draft, the first overall pick and kind of a big time afterthought first overall pick. Mm-hmm. Traded before he made his debut. And he was interesting because his peak was excellent. He mashed. And then that was over very quickly, too.
Yep. I agree. Yeah, he was perhaps one of the best first basemen through his 20s. And then, yeah, and then it was kind of journeyman status.
Yeah. Jose Bautista would be the ultimate, hey, let's just reward a guy for five super sick years. Because he's on this. I can't believe it's been 5 years since he was done playing.
Yeah, one of the more unusual careers you will see, because that 50 home run season, wasn't he like 29 years old at that time?
And just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Which was
like, I don't think he had 54 career home runs until that point. It's close. and he, then he became league leader in home runs 2 years in a row, 29 and 30. Yeah, just never saw that one coming.
No, and someone who will also be remembered for taking that Rugnet Odor punch to the cheek. He got out of baseball with an iconic moment. Any of these other first time guys that you have interest in? When I look at the list, when I actually think of the prospect, I don't want to say the most hyped, because you would say that Mauer being BA's number one overall prospect was the twice in a row would be the most hyped. But just someone remember hearing about because of the chatter that comes with Yankees prospects is Phil Hughes. Phil Hughes was, it happened with him. It happened with Jabba Chamberlain. It's when the Yankees have that next prized right-hander coming up. That's all people are going to talk about. And when I think of Phil Hughes, I think of that incredible season he turned in for the Twins. I think that's still the single season record for strikeout to walk ratio, just walks per nine, I think.
And this is the organization that employed Brad Radke. I mean, that's saying something.
Yes. Yeah, man.
Carlos Silva. I mean, this is saying something.
Man, Radke and Silva. Those are some names. That's an ultimate. Hey, remember some guys. Radke was the first pitcher I loved as a child. Because the other teams get flamethrowers. Twins fans get Brad Radke in that changeup. Just throwing strikes, throwing a changeup. That's how it's supposed to be done, kids.
Well, Scott Erickson for me.
Oh, I remember Scott Erickson. Does anyone else jump out at this in this list for you?
No, Phil Hughes is a good one. He was on at least one cover of BA and the Prospect Handbook in 08, I want to say. So yeah, he definitely had a shining moment as a prospect and young major leaguer, and then with the Twins, as you know, he was pretty good. And he's also a great Twitter follow.
Very, he is
a ton of humility and very well grounded follow.
I
like Phil Hughes.
He and Brandon McCarthy making up that Brandon McCarthy, Brett Anderson making up the rotation of great former pitchers to follow on Twitter. James Shields, an interesting one.
He is the guy who was. I'll get the round wrong, but it was like 19th or 29th round, something crazy out of junior college. And he's the one guy you can always point to counter the idea that a right-handed starter needs a dominant fastball and breaking pitch to be a frontline starter. Wasn't the case with Shields. Mm-hmm. His standout attributes were changeup, an 80 changeup, and he had pinpoint command.
Interesting, too, will likely be a guy who he ends his career with 30 WAR, which is above average, a great major league career, and will almost certainly end being traded for more WAR than he produced with that with the Tatis trade. And I don't know what Will Myers has ended up being, but, involved in two pretty notable trades, but, one of those helping pitch the Royals. To a World Series. But yeah, James Shields is interesting. Victor Martinez, another really hyped prospect. That, I guess it was those Tigers teams, when you think of the Tigers having Miggy and Victor Martinez, and then the rotation of Verlander and Scherzer. That's what I think of him as.
And Prince Fielder in the lineup one of those years, or two of those years maybe, and then the back of that Tigers rotation was excellent. They had David Price briefly. They had Doug Fister. They had Yeah, those were some star-studded Tigers teams that made a run most years.
Doug Pfister also on this ballot. This the fun thing about the Hall of Fame ballot too is seeing the guys, like the random relievers who get on. This is we've got Brad Ziegler, Ryan Madsen, Jim Johnson, and Santiago Casilla. Jim Johnson led the AL in saves one year, I think.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That's
and Brandon Morrow's on the ballot.
Holy yeah.
Cow. Pfister certainly had some big years. Jose Reyes has had some big, won a batting title and had some other stuff happen. Denard Span, fantastic leadoff hitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was one who took a while to come around. That was a high school hitter that the Twins had to have patience with, and it paid off. And then he turned that into a pretty long big league career.
I always liked his style of play. I like him.
Yeah. So I think with the first timers, I think, yeah, it's Beltre, Maurer, Utley. They're in. I wouldn't be shocked if Wright gets in 15 years or something. One of those, some veterans committee or the modern era players committee, something like that. It wouldn't shock me. I think the weird thing with the Hall of Fame is, and I know, I don't think you subscribe to this, but it's like, if such and such is in, why shouldn't this guy be in? Because we have, you know, we have players that would make for a lower bar of entry of, well, if this guy's a Hall of Famer, why isn't this guy a Hall of Famer? And I wonder if that will get explored more in, say, 10, 15 years. David Wright's off the ballot, but he's up for one of these different committees, and who knows how voting will change. But people will look at him and remember him and say, well, why is Harold Baines in here and why is David Wright not in here?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And as I sort these by Ops Plus on Baseball Reference, he is he's behind Manny Ramirez, Alex Rodriguez, Gary Sheffield, and Todd Helton. He's tied with Todd Helton. So, yeah, I mean, he's behind some pretty heavy hitters all time on this list. So his production is way up there. I think that's the other thing, is you have to kind of adjust for the Shea factor, Citi Field factor with him. Like, I think I shared with you that no Met has ever won the MVP. I believe they are the only franchise, except for the 90s expansion franchises, to never have an MVP.
That is stunning to me.
Mm-hmm.
Stunning, because you would think, you know, Daryl Strawberry, Piazza, David Wright.
Beltran,
yep. Yeah. So Beltran is a good segue, because we've got a little bit of time left looking at the holdovers. Beltran is one that he got 46% last year. And I'll kick to you. For me, he's a slam dunk Hall of Famer.
Oh yeah. As a player. Yes, absolutely. One of the standards for center field. I think what we're seeing is the penalty for the 2017 Astros is what we're seeing here. And I think that'll clear up in a year or two and he will be inducted. So
Yeah, because as a player, excellent. I always think too of that postseason with the Astros was unreal. Just a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Yes. And he, you know, later in his career, he latched on with some successful teams and he was able to build that postseason resume. He's got a good one.
Mm-hmm. Who else of the holdovers do you see? We should probably caveat, and just the PED guys, it's hard to say who's going to get in, who's not going to get in. That's tough. I mean, A-Rod and Manny were two of the best players I'll ever see. You know, they're good, but who knows? And A-Rod especially has there's so many different nuances with that guy. Now, just the corniest person. Like, that is nothing about what he did on the field, what he did off the field. He's just a very corny individual. But
I completely agree with you, because watching these guys play in the 90s and 2000s, like, you knew they were for real. Some of the best players ever play. But setting aside the special cases, I think Beltran makes it. Todd Helton's going to make it. That might be it on holdovers. I have a soft spot for Andy Pettitte. Or I'm sorry, Billy Wagner will make it as
Billy
well.
Billy Wagner. Yeah, I think Billy Wagner will get in.
I overlooked him. I would kind of like to see Pettitte's case considered, but He doesn't have the dominating credentials that a lot of these other pitchers have.
Him and Johan are kind of opposites.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one where I see him get in on the bat, where I see Pettit continue to get the votes. I'm like, we couldn't get Johan to 5%. But with Pettit too, I do think the prestige and popularity of the Yankees helps, but also he did so much in the postseason.
Yes.
Between the Yankees and between the Astros, he's got another half career pitch in the postseason, and that's important. Can I preach to you the gospel of Bobby Abreu is a lot better than we all remember?
I've heard it all before, but you may go ahead.
I think one, because a lot of those Phillies teams that Bobby Abreu was on were not good. So he was in kind of this dead era for the Phillies, but Bobby Abreu stole 400 bases. He just sniffed his way over 60 career WAR. He could hit for power. He could run. His OPS plus was 128. So he's not crazy, but like Bobby Abreu was a very, very good player who played for a very, very long time, played for 18 years. And I think there's some value in that. I don't know if that's another one where he probably, let's see, it's his fifth year on the ballot, or he's gone and, you know, he's sitting at 15%. He's probably not in on this, but that's another one where in 15, 20 years, we take a look and it's, hey, this guy was pretty good, was up there with his contemporaries, was our top home run derby single round guy until Josh Hamilton came around. Not sure that counts for anything, but yeah, I mean, he's one of the ones where me as big Hall guy is saying, I would like to see Bobby Abreu celebrated one weekend. Like you said, Cooperstown needs 1 to 3 guys every year. Maybe on an extremely slim ballot year, we have like a slim ballot year ballot where it's like, we've got these like a corral of these holdovers and it's like, all right, let's pick one of these guys out
and
celebrating this guy. That's the thing. I don't want any more years where it's just one guy and nothing on David Ortiz, but that guy is David Ortiz, who was just a DH, a very popular DH with postseason heroics. Like that's where we could say, let's celebrate a Bobby Abreu or an Andy Pettit or someone like that.
Yeah. You know, the thing with Abreu is it's what you're saying is true. And I think at his peak, he was a 5-2 player, like literally. The thing that stands out to me is two All-Star teams and no real high MVP finishes. Like, so people, right or wrong, at the time, did not regard him as one of the top players in baseball, or even in the National League, I should say.
Yeah.
To me, that's a mark against, in my book.
That's fair. That's fair. Career 395 OBP.
Yeah.
Points at Jonah Hill. He gets on base. there's merit to that. Yeah, everyone else of the holdovers, I mean, Twins legend Torii Hunter, he's not getting in. Just generally exciting guy in the field. Rollins would have been an interesting one. It's kind of, I don't think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think advanced metrics hold Jimmy Rollins as high as he was perhaps held. I mean, he did end up with 47.6 career WAR. He won that MVP. He was on a title team.
Yep.
Generally exciting, but yeah, I don't think he gets in the traditional sense.
No, I don't think so either. Unless his ops plus is actually below average. It's below 100, including through age 30. It's 98. Let's see age through age 29. It's 99. So yeah, he never even had like a dominant peak by offense anyway.
Man, you know who's got a 178 ops plus? Is K-Rod. K-Rod batted twice and got one hit. I want to know what scenario had him batting twice.
I know. That is fascinating.
Yeah.
You have to retro sheet that.
Look at that. Yeah. I don't think he's getting in. Where do you think relievers in general, I kind of want to leave you with this since we're bumping up on time. Like we were talking about Wagner getting in, Revere's in, Hoffman's in, but it's like with the save being I guess a little devalued, just not, we don't look at it quite the same way. Where, you know, where do you see, and what for you is the standard for a Hall of Fame reliever?
That's a tough one. I always like to defer this question. Like I understand Rivera is in because he did things that haven't been done, but mm-hmm. but every other reliever who comes on the ballot, I feel like saying, let's give this some time. let's wait on this because I just don't know what to make of relievers because they pitch so infrequently, even compared to the standards of past Hall of Fame relievers. Where I think we're headed is that I think Kenley Jansen gets in. Mm-hmm. Craig Kimbrell has the peak. If he can hang on, I think he's going to have a fairly compelling case.
I think he's staring at some benchmarks. That I don't have that in front of me, but I think he's got some stuff coming up that if he can hit it, it looks really good.
I believe he can pass 400 this year if he has not 400 saves. I think that is correct. And I think 400 gets a pitcher into the top 10 territory on the all-time list. So that's impressive. I don't know. Do you have a strong opinion on relievers on the Hall?
I think they need to hit those benchmarks. Relievers are one area where I would say you need to have the length because of the pitch the infrequency in which they pitch. I think if you're a reliever, you need to have done it at a very high level for almost 15 years.
I think that's
at least reasonable to ask. I think that 400 save benchmark, getting in that top 10, I think that makes a lot of sense. And then we have to have felt it to a certain stance of the dominance. Like, is this guy closing for his respective league and the All-Star team?
Yeah,
multiple years. Because I think that's something with value. Like, remember the classic Gagne? I think it was he gave it a hit up to Hank Blaylock in that All-Star game. But it was like, who's that guy? Who's the guy in the league? And kind of like that standard you talked about earlier. Were you the best player in your league? If you're the lockdown reliever in your league for a stretch of time. You know, because we've seen too, so many of these guys have been a flash in the pan, one incredible year. You know, Gagne probably the peak of that. But yeah, I like the idea of having relievers in the Hall of Fame of, mm-hmm. you know, rewarding the two best guys for every decade, I think makes sense.
I think that's right.
Because, you know, there is a skill to it. You know, it's not just failed starter, and it's not just you have to have incredible stuff to close down games. There's a different component to that, and the best guys have done it for a long time. Yeah. So with that, I think that on next year's ballot, then in total, from guys we've said, so the Helton, Wagner, do you think Andrew Jones is getting in?
Not this year.
Yeah, he's tough. I think he gets in eventually. I think the same committee that voted in Fred McGriff will put him in because I think there's a lot of
yes.
I know there's a lot of support among especially his former teammates to put him in.
Yep, I agree.
Beltran gets in, and then the three first timers and Maurer, Utley, and Beltre, and then probably a couple of these character concern guys get in. So you could say on this ballot, there's probably 10 future Hall of Famers, which is pretty strong year.
Yeah. When you put it that way.
So I'm looking forward to it. I am going to, for me, it's the Maurer year. I would love for him to get in. I know that first ballot has a sort of, you know, has a certain connotation. Some guys won't vote for a guy on the first ballot or unless they're some sort of slam dunk, but Maurer, I would love to get in, but any parting thoughts on this year's Hall of Fame ballot?
No, I think we summarized, hit the highs, hit the lows.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you taking the time. This was enjoyable. I could stare at this baseball reference screen all day, but, tell the folks again, where they can follow you, where they can check out what's coming up at BA, what they have to be looking forward to.
Yeah. Summer prospect season rolls on. Best tools, top rankings, all the analysis you could shake a stick at. You can find me on Twitter, or the site formerly known as Twitter, at Matt Eddy, B-A-E-D-D-Y. And yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining, Matt. I really appreciate it.
You are welcome, Kyle. It was fun.
And that's it for today's episode with Matt Eddy. Big thanks to Matt for stopping by and talking out the Hall of Fame with me. Something we're going to have to do again. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Rate and review. If you haven't, go check out past interviews. And we will see you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big money.